Hello, everyone. It's Connor here. Before you hear this amazing episode with Amber Gray, which you're absolutely going to love, I want to tell you about our Patreon. It's called Drama Plus. It's our bonus content platform where it's the drama you know and love. Dylan and I chit-chatting about all things theater, pop culture, love, life. Is there more to that catchphrase we've been saying for 5 years? I don't remember all of a sudden. Anyway, Drama Plus has all that and more. You get a couple bonus episodes every single month where it's just the two of us diving into the things you're not hearing on the show. And you get added to our Instagram close friends where we post like funny memes, hot takes. The tea is piping hot, as you know, people love to say. How boring. Anyway, Drama Plus is not boring. You're absolutely going to love it. Thank you for supporting us and for supporting our show. $5 a month, patreon.com/thedramapodcast to become a member of the Drama Plus fam. All right, enjoy this episode with Amber Gray. We love you. Bye.
Press play.
Curtain up and now we're in.
It's time to taste in.
The shade and tea
to spill.
Ooh, drama.
Oh, that's a tweet. Did they book? Who got numb?
They option no.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today?
Oh, that's a gag, honey.
Say no more.
Drama.
Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life.
I am Connor McDowell.
And I am Dylan McDowell. Connor, it's our first episode of 2025. Happy New Year. We made it through the holiday season.
Happy New Year. I know. We recorded like six within 10 days in 2024, so we could have a nice little podcasting break, which was wonderful.
You know, being weekly, it's constantly like the wheel is churning and turning, but I got to admit, it was nice.
I know. Should we switch to like seasons? Should we switch to like,
no,
3 months we stop, 3 months we, I don't know.
No, there's always so many fun people to chat with. I just feel like we'd have to be too restrictive.
I know. And the fans demand it weekly. That what will they do without us on Wednesdays? What would you do without a Tuesday night free without preparing stuff? Anyway, I know. I'm so excited. Oh, I hope our listeners have loved the lineup of 2025 so far. And I'm so excited for today's chat. But before we dive into it, highlights from the holiday season. Anything you want to bring up or mention coming into this new year?
Other than family time, my favorite thing to do during the holidays is go to the cinema and check out some new movies. And we were delivered such an interesting array of films this year. We saw like, what was it? A Complete Unknown, Baby Girl, and Nosferatu, all within the course of like, I mean, it was like three or four days.
Oh, I know. I loved it. It was so exciting. And I have to tell you, my favorite one, which this is a shock, even for me to admit, was Nosferatu.
I know. You don't like the spooky.
But it was so well done. Oh my God, I loved it.
The costumes, the performances, everything about it was great. You know, my soul was stirred by A Complete Unknown, I have to
was
say.
Was it?
Yeah. Joan Baez, I would rather the movie have been about her.
Oh, well.
But, you know, it's still so great. And maybe that'll happen next.
I know.
A spinoff, a sequel.
Well, that actress who played Joan Baez was fantastic.
Monica Barbaro.
Oh my God, like I loved her. But I know the Bob Dylan music really does stir the soul, doesn't it?
Mm.
It does.
You know, this is a strange transition, but I'm going to say our guest today, her voice stirs my soul.
Oh, I agree. That's not strange at all. I totally agree. And in doing prep for all of this, I've just been consuming Amber content. I can't wait to talk to her. So do you mind, Dylan, if I bring in our first recorded episode guest of 2025?
Do it.
All right, y'all, our guest today is a dazzling and dynamic Tony Award nominee, currently starring in Eureka Day on Broadway. She's perhaps best known as Persephone in Hadestown, a role she played to great acclaim across the globe for her work as Our Lady of the Underground. She received nominations for the Tony, Drama League, and Lord Tell Awards, taking home an Outer Critics Circle Prize and being lauded by the New York Times as one of the best performances of 2019. Audiences will recall her Theater World Award-winning performance in Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet of 1812, as well as recent scene-stealing turns in Sondheim's final musical, Here We Are, Sam Gold's Macbeth on Broadway, Daniel Fish's Oklahoma, Brandon Jacob Jenkins, and Octoroon, I hope I said that right, Taylor Max, a 24-decade history of popular music, The Oyster, Radio Hour, and Jacques Brel. She's a company member of The Team, as well as the radical performance community, Reverend Billy, and the Stop Shopping Choir. Upcoming TV and film includes Long Bright River and Barry Jenkins' Underground Railroad, as well as Broadway cult favorite Submissions Only and The Gilded Age. She's an absolute superstar, and we're so gagged to have her with us today. please welcome to drama,
Amber Gray.
Oh my God. Wow. That was such a kind intro.
Aw, Amber, welcome. We're so happy to have you with us.
Thank you. Thank you. Happy to be here.
Happy New Year. Are you having a good start to 2025?
Yeah. I mean, we're in the holiday schedule, which is like, you know, you do extra shows in a week and you have funny days off. So we're hustling right now. Everybody's getting sick. All the shows are getting sick, you know?
Oh, I know. I saw a lot of different shows had to cancel performances and whatnot. It's scary, but I think that we're in a better place with like actually canceling shows now, as opposed to back in the day when it was the show must go on mentality always.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's exactly right. Yeah.
Wait, so how many days in a row have you been performing as we speak with you today? It's a Sunday.
Today's my last day.
Oh, good.
But I have two today, which I don't normally.
Interesting.
Because they gave us New Year's Eve off. Yeah, so I have the normal Monday break tomorrow, which I really look forward to. You were cracking me up when you were naming all the like awards I was nominated for Hadestown, because I don't really care about that stuff. But I am going to tell you about the one I did really care about. That was a nice feather in my cap that you didn't say. The Cheetah Rivera nominee for Best Lead Dancer on Broadway. I was like, they think I can dance? Oh my God, I'm so honored.
Your Playbill bio should lead with that, Amber. My God, I didn't even
I don't put awards in the bio. It's very, very rare. If you see an award in my bio, it means some rep of mine wrote it.
Yeah, yeah, they told you you needed it.
That's so
wow.
funny.
Wow, wait, congrats on that one. That's amazing.
Thank you. I didn't win, but I was so honored. Yeah.
And there Heck is yeah. a dance. Is it the beginning of Way Down, Hadestown, that you would do that dance?
Sure. I dance in Way Down. I dance in Our Lady. And by dancing, I mean like flop around on stage because I'm double jointed. If they want to call it dance, baby, rock on. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I can picture it in my head. Most recently, I saw Betty Who playing the role. And she's so tall. They're such a tall
performer. Yeah, she's so tall. She's like Amazon.
It's just so amazing. Is it fresh in your mind because you're in rehearsals already to return to Hadestown, or?
We're not in rehearsals yet.
Not yet? Okay.
No, we don't rehearse till we go over there. And we basically have like 1 week of put in. So I've been listening to it again, which I also don't listen to my own cast recordings.
Sure.
I've been listening to it and like my body remembers the moves. It's just baked into my muscles at this point. So I think it'll be all right to only have a week, but I don't know.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure it's baked in. That's probably the best way of putting it. Because, I mean, when did you start your journey with Hadestown?
2014.
10 years. Oh, my God. Like 11 years ago. Sorry. I'm still in 2024 in my mind.
11 years ago. I did 6 2-week workshops. I did it off Broadway. I did it in Canada for 3 months. I did it in London for 5 months. I did it on Broadway for a year, then a year and a half of pandemic. Then I did it for like 5 more months on Broadway. Yeah.
Oh my God.
And there was even that one time they had to bring you back for an emergency, if I remember seeing that.
That's right. When I was rehearsing for the Scottish play, I had to cross the street and go do Hadestown a few times.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Now that's Broadway, baby. Mm-hmm. That is amazing.
It's Broadway, baby.
Of all of those different stints in Hadestown, which one was your favorite? When you look back on, like, that was the most fun.
The one you were always around for, New York Theater Workshop, baby.
Yes. Which to our listeners, I mentioned to Amber before we started recording that my first experience in New York, living in New York, was interning at New York Theater Workshop. And that was when Hadestown was playing there.
Yeah.
And I can remember, Amber, watching you warming up before.
I had to warm up then.
In the theater.
I don't warm up now at all. I'm so lazy. I definitely had to warm up before every show in order to sing it. And again, it's just muscles. Like my muscles will do it now in my sleep, sing those songs. Yeah, I did. I religiously warmed up. That's so sweet. You were there. I love it. Yeah.
Oh my God. I loved it. And that version was different than the one that went to Broadway. I remember like memorizing that the CD of the cast album.
Yeah.
That version's not on streaming now. So I can't listen to it.
The New York Theater Workshop version is not on streaming?
So I think just parts of it.
Parts
are.
Of it are. Yeah.
Oh, well, the album is only parts of it.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not the full show. Aeneas mostly put songs on there that were not on the original concept album. And that's similar to what they did with the like London live recording recently. It's only select songs.
I noticed that. And they cut Flowers, which is one of my faves.
Yeah. We don't have Flowers on the New York Theater Workshop one, which I'm always sad about because Nabia's voice is so extraordinary, but she also sang it in a totally different key. And so it would just be nice to like, you know, have all the bootleg versions, I guess.
It would be
sure
so
someone
nice.
Has them out there somewhere, Amber.
I mean, I have it on a Vimeo recording, but like.
Who were you when you met Persephone 11 years ago?
What a great question. Wow. Well, I didn't have kids, you know, and that the first time I ever worked on it, we were up at Dartmouth for 2 weeks in their summer session. And sophomores are in session up at Dartmouth over the summer for some weird reason. So they're quite strict with that program that's affiliated with New York Theatre Workshop, that the actors who are staying in the dormitories who are housed with them, you know, you cannot have guests. Like Anais couldn't even bring her baby in. We had to like sneak the baby into the dorms. And, you know, I had a partner, but he didn't need to come up and visit for any reason. So I was like really alone for 2 weeks. And we had some very silly contract. We were only allowed to rehearse, I can't remember. It was either 3 or 4 hours a day. It was very limited, the amount of time you were allowed to rehearse. So we just sat, and Taylor Mack was my Hermes then.
Oh, wow.
So we just sat around and like played instruments and improvised and really learned that material so well. And it was really fun. Like my memory of finding that character was just like sitting on campus lawns and like diving in because I had nothing else to do on this Ivy League campus, you know?
What made New York Theatre Workshop your favorite when you got to that point?
Honestly, I think it's just because my firsts are always my favorite. Just like Great Comet at Ars Nova was my favorite. Just my first time really digging into a character and figuring it out it's just like a first love feeling. It's not to say the other ones. Mm. Like, I certainly think other versions were maybe more right, if you will, but it was just my favorite. I loved how artistically done it was, which some people really despised. You know, it was more of a staged concert kind of vibe, and it was in the round, and we had this entrance way up high, and you could kind of like seashell your way down this amphitheater down to a dirt floor down below. And that's where the main performance space was. Like, the set was so cool. There was a tree on the set with like these crazy gnarly roots. Yeah, I loved that it was in the round, and all of the principals sang the chorus part. There was no worker chorus. And that was really fun for me to sing all those parts. And it was very artistic the way it was done. But, you know, the average audience member was like, I don't get it. So
right.
We had to separate that out and make an actual workers' chorus. And I absolutely think it's way more powerful with a group of people as the chorus. But yeah, selfishly, I'm biased.
Oh, totally.
Wow. Now that you're talking about it, it's all coming back to me in my head, too. Mm-hmm. Are there any things that Persephone did in previous iterations that you miss?
Oh, interesting. Absolutely. There was an incredible verse I had in Chant 2 that I'm trying to think. I did it at New York Theatre Workshop and I did it in Canada. The lyrics changed in London, didn't quite work as well. And then it lasted on Broadway for maybe 10 previews and then it got cut, my entire verse, which I take issue with and I still do. And I joke all the time, like I sang it in my cabaret last year at 54 Below and I was like, they made a mistake by cutting it. It should be there. I think it gives Persephone more power. It's a little, the women are tethered to the men in that story in a way that sometimes I'm like, wah, wah, wah. It's a bummer. It just gave her more teeth that she was like fighting back one of those final numbers. But the main difference over time was that she started drinking. She didn't drink when we did it in New York Theatre Workshop. She was just like happy. She brings out like a bottle of wine and living it up and like pours it for other people. But there was no sort of indication that she was drinking to numb herself and deal with her anger towards what's happening in Hadestown. And I did bring out a flask in Our Lady, but that was the only song I would like have a little bit. I wasn't like acting drunk for half the play, which was super fun to figure out. Like that, it was in London. Basically, Trafkin, I was like pumping milk in the corner. Trafkin came up to me and was like, I think you're trashed, like ab fab trashed. I was like, okay, yeah. She will often direct with sort of pop culture references. And I'm like, well, now I get to go home and watch a bunch of Ab Fab because they didn't really know that show. And to be living in London and binge watching Ab Fab was so delicious. And I just like, once I watched all the physical comedy, I'm absolutely fabulous. I understood how to play Persephone.
That is absolutely fabulous. You know, what a better way to say it. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
What did Persephone say in Chant 2?
I'm just remembering. Okay. When I was a young girl like you, sister, I was hungry too. Hungry for the underworld when I was a young girl. Now you know how it tastes, the fruit of Mr. Hades' ways. I can't talk it, obviously. I would have to sing it, which is like, I don't need to sing on your podcast. I feel so obnoxious. But she basically is like, do you taste it? It's poisonous. It's bitter. Like, and love is not a gilded cage, you know? And she basically was talking to Eurydice about what real love is, and like this like shiny stuff, the money, the is not it, you know. There's like one more final plea to Eurydice, which honestly they hadn't really connected in that kind of a way. Persephone doesn't interact much with Eurydice once she makes the choice to go down to Hadestown. So it was like that whole dynamic kind of, it was there for me internally because I had played that before, but it's like gone on the page, right?
That's for so sure. Interesting. I have to say, you gave me full body chills, even just reciting some of those lines. But I do feel, I remember you and Eva having this incredible sort of dynamic connection, regardless of that.
Yeah.
I remember the two of you playing off each other well.
Yeah, oh, I'm crazy about her. She's like my little sister. I love her so much. Yeah. And actually, Reeve and Eva to this day still call me like, I'd say once every 2 weeks. And they know I'm not like, I'm not really a great sleeper, and they stay up really late. So oh, like,
yes, they do.
Honestly, like, I'd say like once a month, they call me at 3 a.m. and I answer. And we like have FaceTime calls in the middle of the night. And my partner will come out and be like, be quiet. I'm like so loud with them on the phone while my kids are sleeping, whatever. I love it.
Aww.
I love when they call me late at night. It's very cute. Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. Eva did our podcast maybe 2 years ago. Dylan, you can remind me. But I remember she was like, it was on like a Sunday at like maybe 11 a.m. She was like, oh, I still haven't slept from last night.
They
I was impressed.
They don't sleep. And I never try calling them before 2 p.m. because they're night owls. They get up really late. It's so, they're so funny. Yeah. Yeah.
I wish I was gosh. Like that. I'm so sleepy all the time, Amber.
I'm so sleepy all the time too, but my body, like, it wakes up for a whole host of reasons.
Yeah. Well, as a mom.
A mom is a big part of it, but it's, yeah, some of it is just hormonal stuff as you get older, you know?
Yeah. I appreciate the way you've always been so open about, you know, motherhood. Rob, I remember there was that famous picture of you pumping backstage right. at Hadestown that went yeah. viral like 2019 or whatever. I think it's really cool that you're able to show the balance, and I know you're not super, super online, but it's still really cool to see.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Yeah. I try to be, I mean, I'm not like cagey. I don't have any secrets really. I'm very happy to answer things honestly and share with people. I just don't, I have no desire to live online. I think it's a waste of a life.
There's so much happening offline, you know. That's what certainly yes. one of my resolutions for 2025.
Yeah, baby.
From my phone a little bit more.
Yeah, yeah. It's really good for your health
and attention mm-hmm. span. Like
thinking about mental health. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I actually mean your mental health. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Speaking totally. Of mental health, life in general.
Yeah,
Amber, are you well?
Thanks for asking. So kind. People don't ask that really. They'll say like, "How are you?" Which
right.
Oh, hold on a moment. Okay, Jessica Hecht just walked into the dressing room.
Oh my goodness, a cameo.
There she is. Oh, I'm doing a podcast, my love, with these beautiful twins, Dylan and Connor. There she is.
Hi, Connor. You're so lucky to be speaking with Amber.
I don't know that they can hear you because I'm on.
We can hear. We can hear. Yeah, we can
tell her we love her.
We love her so much too.
They yeah. love you so much.
Enjoy.
Now she's playing charades.
She's number one.
Oh, cutie.
Definitely. Oh my God. What an angel.
Love her.
That's so fun. Yeah, but yes, are you well?
Yeah, what a great question. Well, referencing your like balancing motherhood point, I'm like, have I been well for the last 10 years? I don't know, actually. Like, I got pregnant in 2015. People all the time assume I do it well because I have great kids. My kids are doing well. And I love my career. My career is doing well. But like many things in my life are disintegrating and are not well. You know, like, is my relationship okay? I don't know. Is my house clean? Like, absolutely not. Have I bathed? Like, maybe once a week. You know, I definitely have some waves where I feel deeply not well. In this particular moment, I'm fine, which I'll take, you know, like I'm good. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad to hear it.
She's number one. She's number one.
Hold on. She's coming back.
She's amazing. She's amazing. Please don't let her undersell her. Her kids are remarkable. Because
my kids are remarkable.
Remarkable.
I believe it. I know it. Oh my gosh. What an angel.
Bye, Annie. Love you.
Oh my God. That's amazing.
Yeah. I think as a human, I'm just prone to depression anyway. So I have to be very careful since having children that my diet is good. My exercise is good. That I meditate to make sure that I'm okay and I do everything. But it's really easy for that to slip away. I'm a very like all or nothing person. I'm either like really doing it all and I'm so anally healthy, or I just like fall to pieces and go to shit. Tricky. I still have not figured that out at 43. Balance.
It's certainly something that you'll figure out when it works and when it doesn't work. You know, it'll ebb and flow, I suppose. Do you find that being in like the 8-show-a-week schedule helps structure things a little bit more for you, or?
It does. It really does. I like in the same way that when people are in school, you know, you don't realize that having somebody else compartmentalize your time like that and tell you where to be at all times and when to do stuff and a little bit of free time, you're actually very productive, you know. Then people get out of school and they fall apart because they've never had to decide how to schedule the day. It does really help me schedule my day when I have to go away and am on a consistent schedule. But the hardest part, then my family stuff gets super tricky, right? Because I don't see my kids because I'm off on Monday when they're in school. So that gets very dicey, in particular with my 9-year-old. My older boy is my emo baby. He's very sensitive and he just like, he has a hard time when I'm in an 8-show-a-week schedule. So that's brutal. Like, I luckily am at a point where I can take breaks every year and really be with my family, which I love. But after a couple of months of that, I start to get depressed. I start to slip after a couple of months. And then when I'm back in a show schedule, I feel artistically fulfilled. I'm very happy again. But then my family starts to slip. You know, it's this,
That's tough to have your career at the same time. You know,
Is he still awake when you get home from the show? Because I know this is a shorty.
Right.
This is a shorty, right?
Yeah. Oh my God. I love that you just asked that because he is. yes, we have 7 o'clock shows. And so a lot of nights will come down at 8:45. So like if everything times out, I could be home at 9:30. He is given melatonin at 8. He's normally asleep by 9. But since I've been doing this run, he is sitting there like a little creep. The whole house is asleep and he's just sitting on his bed, like waiting, staring out the
window. One lamp light on.
Exactly. Oh my God. He's so sweet.
Sounds like you two are very close.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm very close with my boys and super affectionate with them. I learned last year, Angus, my older one, came home and he's like, "Mommy, is it not normal to kiss your parents on the mouth?" Oh. And I was like, I'm like, do we really have to talk about this right now? Apparently went on a field trip and some other dad that was a chaperone that day was like, "No, that's inappropriate." And I was like, how dare that parent? And I was like, Angus, that's fine in their family. They can have that rule, but there is nothing wrong with familial affection. Like that is bullshit that some other parent said that to you. I was like, we are a very affectionate family. And at any point that you are ever made uncomfortable in front of your friends, you just let me know. And I won't make out with you anymore.
Do your boys fully understand that you are an icon? I mean, let's not put it lightly here.
So interesting. When Angus was super little, he told his teacher, because they like went around the room and said what their parents did. He's like, "My mommy dances on stage for money." But, you know, sounding like I'm like a pole dancer. And I was like, it's not true. I also like never wash my face at night, especially when I'm in musicals. I'm so tired. So like in the morning, I have like mascara running down my cheeks when I'm dropping off my kid. I'm like, they totally think I'm like, I'm a hooker, which fine. Over time. So like right now in Eureka Day, there are posters of me all over the city, which I find humiliating. And the principal the other day was like, "Saw you in the subway station." And I went, "This is the first time you've ever spoken to me in the 5 years my kids have gone to the school." He does understand. He finds the notion of fame really fascinating. And he's always like, "Mommy, you're famous, right?" And I'm like, sure. Within like a 10 block radius around Times Square. Like, yes, mommy is famous, but like we can go to another state and like, no, not at all, honey. Or like, no, I'm not really famous, but like there's a niche corner. Sure. And he is fascinated by that notion. And he came to see Hadestown for the first time after the pandemic, our very first show back, I thought would be a good one to take him to. Cause I knew it'd be very loud and like a rock concert. And he was so angry that all the people loved me. He like felt rage. And during intermission, he's like, "That's my mommy," according to dad. I don't, but yeah, I guess he's like, gets jealous about it and possessive. So it's a tricky thing. When he was younger, if I would sing around the house, he'd be like, "Do you have a job? Why are you singing?" You know, it's like, he associates that with me going away.
Mm-hmm. Right. That makes sense. And that you're going to be going to London soon.
Yep. Though they're going to be with me for a big chunk of it. We just like pull them out of school.
Cool.
I know my baby daddy from Reverend Billy from that political activist community. I've been in that choir for 20 years and we opened for Neil Young last year for like six weeks, like a Live Nation, like proper commercial rock tour, right? In huge stadiums. And we were like, let's just pull the boys from school. So it was like our whole family on like in little pod beds touring the country. It was very fun.
That's rock and roll. That's almost famous. Oh my God.
We just were like, we're going to pull them from school. Can you like send some homework packets or something? They're like, whatever. It doesn't really matter in elementary school, you know?
Totally.
Who cares?
Well, speaking of school and everything like that, you're in the midst of this new play that's currently on Broadway only through like February 2nd. And then you go off to London. So there's not a lot of time for folks to catch it. Eureka Day. Yeah. I've heard so many amazing things about it, and especially that it's starting a lot of conversations that feel very relevant. What is this play about? Do you mind giving a quick little synopsis?
No, I don't. It's five characters or four parents and one like kind of principal, if you will, on a school board at a really left liberal private school, like sort of a Montessori or a Waldorf. And basically what ends up happening is there's a mumps outbreak within the school. And so they have to have these debates about whether or not to make it mandatory to get a mumps vaccination to come back to school, right? Because a lot of the school have not been vaccinated. So, but it's really an argument about your children, right? It's like not actually a vaccine argument, the whole play. But that's the basic premise. And it's funny, which is nice. It's nice to not have a show like this be too, you know, didactic and like smashing people over the head with a hammer. It's luckily has a lot of humor, which I'm grateful for a charged subject like that in this particular moment in history. And it's my first realistic play in my professional career.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Now that you say that, I'm thinking about the Scottish play.
Shakespeare. Because, I mean, in Octoroon, I don't know if you guys ever saw an Octoroon, but a lot of the language is contemporary BJJ material, but then some of it is the original Bushiko from like the 1800s. So the language sounds carré. It's like the Nosferatu. Am I thinking the right person? No. The person who made The Witch. What is that?
Oh, Eggers.
Yeah. Thank you.
Nosferatu. Yeah.
Oh, it is. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. Yeah. I am normally, I fail at these pop culture references. I haven't seen it yet, but yeah, you know how he writes in this kind of like heightened old timey language? Mm-hmm. That's sort of how the Bushiko sounds for an octoroon. And there are a few characters within an octoroon that are like the play within the play kind of, and they speak in this heightened language. And the way we acted it was by looking at all of these old acting books that had melodrama gestures. So we would do these like kind of funny things while we were talking, these odd arm gestures and hand gestures, and said this heightened language. So it was a straight play, but it was really heightened and bizarre. So yeah, this is the first time I'm ever like realism. But then some days I'm like, but is it realism? Because we're in a 900 seat house and we're not mic'd, so we're having to project. And when you have this really contemporary language that's literally on the page, like MMM, see, I don't want to be too loud in my mic where I have to be like, to like fill up this giant house. You know, I'm like, this isn't realism right now. This is called overacting 101.
Yeah. It sounds like, I'm sure that the audience then, no mics, you know, a little bit more intimate than some of the other houses.
Yeah.
You can probably feel reactions at lines and moments.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
On both sides of the argument with vaccines, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, the play is, I just researched all this stuff in 10 years ago now, right? When my first kid was born, because I really didn't know how I felt about it. I'm an army brat, so I'm like beyond vaccinated. Like I have all these ones I don't need from traveling around the world.
Oh, fair.
But with my own kid, and I had two home births with a midwife, and I was like, oh, and you know, she has feelings about vaccines. So I was like, let me look into this. I did a lot of research, learned a lot about both sides. And it's hard. It's not really a both sides thing. Like that Venn diagram has a lot of overlap. You know what I mean? They're just multiple opinions about vaccines. And the thing is, there is lots of direct evidence of like a child dying of SIDS a day or two later after getting vaccinated. And it's so hard because it's not necessarily from the vaccine itself and that all vaccines are bad. It was like human error because the nurse that day like mixed it with the wrong substance, you know? So it's complicated. It's often human error why a vaccine will end up harming somebody, but there is totally a vaccine court that the government has and they do compensate people. There is a direct correlation sometimes, but it's incredibly rare. It's like getting a bad bottle of Robitussin for whatever reason. You know what I mean? Like the chances of it happening are non-existent pretty much. So it's a very complicated conversation. And I think this plays rad because it's super well argued. And the sort of anti-vaxxer, if you will, if you want to use the like cheap word about it, she has real reasons she feels that way. And they are revealed in the play and you feel for her. You understand why she thinks that. And it's tricky. People are complicated, right? Which I love that the play shows that people are not so binary. It's like people are way more complicated than this. And the play also really I think demonstrates well, they try to listen to each other and try to find common ground until they can't anymore. But they listen way more than the average American right now, in my opinion. And they listen with grace, and they don't assume if you disagree, they don't assume that you are wrong, and they don't assume that you're dumb, right? Which is vital. Vital.
Yeah.
I learned this lesson as a kid in these courses I took for a while. It was like a philosophy class. They taught something about how you can be right or you can have love in your life. And I think that is really profound. And this play, I think, demonstrates it well, actually.
I have to sit with that one for a second, because that is it's interesting.
Really deep. And once I learned that lesson, it helped me. I mean, I'm biracial, and my family, I would never use the word racist now. They definitely have some feelings that I don't need to talk about. We don't need to talk about race. We don't need to talk about politics. We don't need to talk about religion. We don't need to talk about art. And that's fine. We don't talk about those things. There's plenty we can talk about if I want to have love in my life with those particular family members, you know?
Mm-hmm, for sure. So growing up, did you say you were an army brat? Or
yeah.
When did you, like, I suppose I'm curious, when did you get involved with the arts? We borrow Ring of Keys from the musical Funhouse.
Yeah.
Maybe you were watching something. Maybe you were participating in something and you identified with it and you thought, oh my God, I need to be part of this. What age was that at? Because I'm wondering, like, what the family dynamic was. Were they playing music, et cetera, et cetera?
Oh my God, I love it. Well, my mom was in the military, and then my dad was in the military, and my stepmom was in the military. So between the two households, each household moved every 2 or 3 years. So they had joint custody. So I was always boom, 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 back and forth between the United States and overseas in Europe. And I lived in 4 different cities in Germany, Amsterdam, London. I lived in Berlin when the wall was still up when I was a kid.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, the wall came down when I was 8 and we were there.
Your passport was stamped.
It was stamped, honey. I mean, I like went through passports. So that's the family dynamic. And sometimes they were also, 2 of them were very high ranks. So they did really shady stuff. And the other one would have to go to like training quite a bit. So sometimes I would be with my grandparents in Texas. Like there was lots of bouncing around and being raised by different versions of my family, right? So because of that, Amber Gray was very shy and was always moving and didn't really have any friends, right? Or what we call a loser, a nerd, right? So I also, when you grow up in Germany, you start skiing when you're 3. It's a very pedestrian sport there. It's not like a rich people sport like here.
Yeah.
It's not like a high class sport. They just put a helmet on you, no poles, and shove you down the mountain and you figure it out. That's like how you learn how to ski. So I was like in ski races by the time I was 5. So in some very formative years, I lived in Massachusetts and I joined the ski team because I was good at it. But those jocks are not nice. They're competitive inherently, right? And they're not the kindest teenagers. So I started doing plays in high school to make friends because I needed friends, and they were nice and they accepted all the freaks and geeks, no questions asked. That's the only reason I started doing plays, was for the community and the camaraderie. And in Wayland, Massachusetts in particular, that theater director was extraordinary. He released a book recently and he sent it to me because the Misha Chaudhry, who wrote the foreword, who's a playwright in New York City, was like up for a Pulitzer last year. So doing very well from Wayland. He wrote about seeing me as Ophelia in Hamlet when he was in middle school and I was in high school. So this theater director, Mr. Weingartner, sent me a copy of the book, and it was wild having all these flashbacks and memories of how he taught, like what is pedagogy was. I was like, oh right, I had forgotten how brilliant this man is. Like all of the things he taught me are still in my system, but I don't directly think of them coming from Richard anymore. You know, Richard Weingartner is his name. But one of the main things he did teach was a company is a team, and a company is as good as its weakest link, and you give the weakest link the lead so they get better. And I had the lead 3 shows in a row. And so the seniors would stay after and like work with me for extra time after rehearsal ended. So I started to associate theater with like real family, real community that had your back and was taking care of you and wanted you to be better. You know, little did I know, then I went to a BFA program. I went to a conservatory and they're like, I mean, am I allowed to say cunty on this podcast? They're like, oh my God, they are not nice. Those other like, I'm an actor and oh, you think you're good? Like it was rough when I went to Boston University and I kind of became the black sheep. I expected to go there and be one of the worst ones again and like observe and watch and get better and better and better and learn. And then I went in my freshman year and I was one of the best ones there, which made other ones like not want to talk to me. And I was like, this is stupid. And so I just, you know, be outside chain smoking my cigarettes.
That's badass though. I can see it all. Okay, wait. So when you're given these leads in high school, and is it, it's known that the weak links get the roles? Like, how did that feel?
I mean, I loved it. I mean, I was nervous to do them. Like, I played Mary Magdalene in Jesus Christ Superstar. I didn't have half the notes. Like, I mean, I literally could not sing the chorus. I would try and it would like just sound like my mic went out every night. I don't know. It was kind of incredible. He always did musicals, Shakespeare plays, and then a new play, which is like actually perfect for my career as it stands now. There was a winter slot that would, there used to be a program at Emerson College in the winter time that would invite like 10 high schools to come and present like an hour long devised play that they had created as a young teen company. And we were known for like winning most years against Lexington, Massachusetts. They were the enemy. And Lexington shows were quite good as well, but we were known for devising these new plays. And like, that's been my whole life. My whole bread and butter career is new work. And yeah, I really associate it with those roots. I mean, I didn't take it personally. I wasn't like offended that I had been given the lead. I knew I was bad. I was not good. I was there for the community. It wasn't, I didn't have enough of an ego about it that it mattered if I was good or bad. You know what I mean? Mm.
Did you take singing lessons?
Mm-mm. I just grew up in really evangelical Christian situations. So I was always in a choir. And then by high school, I did end up joining the sort of school choir. Then I ended up joining like a concert choir where we sang a bunch of madrigals, which is a smaller kind of chamber choir. And then I joined like an a cappella group, you know, where we're singing like Indigo Girls, whatever, like Tori Amos, Bjork.
Yeah.
Yes, I had a lot of practice singing, but I wouldn't say I had a particularly strong voice or much of a range. And that kind of remained true until grad school. In grad school, I had an incredible singing teacher. Her name's Deb Lapidus. And at the time, so this is 15 years ago now, at the time she had taught at Juilliard and NYU grad for like 30 years. So she, and she still teaches at both those programs. So she's baked into those programs. It was the first time I really understood how to place my voice like an instrument. And she just gave me great technique. And after leaving, my voice just got stronger and stronger. Like when people ask me to come talk with students, they'll ask about my musical theater career because it really was like a happy accident, my musical theater career. I have a BFA in acting. I have an MFA in acting from one of the best three programs in the country. And it, I don't want to fully say poo-pooed the American musical in that program, but they're like, musicals, really? You know, the actors were like all black and chain smoke and like... it's not, you know, it's not like the musical theater floor where they're like wearing color blocked clothes and like character shoes.
Yeah.
It is not that. We're like barefoot in black sweatpants and black t-shirts. But you had a singing class, right? And you do one cabaret while you're there, which is fun, but like everybody's kind of bad at it and scared to sing in front of people. That was more the vibe while I was in grad school. But she gave me the tools to leave there and maybe understand how to try to do it, right? One of my first gigs out of school. My very first gig was an octoroon at PS122, which I did multiple iterations of. But I met Rachel Chafkin while I was in grad school. And then we ended up working together. About a year later, I ended up doing a team show that they were calling a musical, but it was more like a play with several songs, which I did. So she knew I could sing. Dave Malloy saw that show. That show traveled all over the world. We went to Hong Kong, Perth, Australia, like Salzburg, Portugal. Like we went everywhere with that show. It was really magical for a couple of years. And one time we were doing it at the Traverse in Edinburgh for like 6 weeks, like a really long run at the most beautiful theater in Edinburgh. And while we were there, Dave Malloy was doing Beowulf. So he had seen Mission Drift. I had seen Beowulf. Like we kind of knew of each other. And then his dear friend who he had done three pianos with at New York Theater Workshop, his name's Alec Duffy. He started his own theater company called Hoi Polloi. Alec, I ran into him in the street in Brooklyn. He was like, oh, you are from Mission Drift. I'm about to do this like 12-person musical with Dave Malloy, who you know, right? I was like, yeah, I know Dave. He's like, I'd love for you to do it. It's like a study of cult culture. And I was like, I'm in. But you don't have to sing that well for that either. But anyway, I had done this other Dave Malloy musical. So I'm getting to my Great Comet audition, where I auditioned for Helene and for Maria Dee, the stepmommy, that the Grace McLean character. Mm-hmm. I had to sing those two songs. And like at this point in my career, my agents were always like, your friends are asking for you again. They were like annoyed, you know, because like an Ars Nova gig is not going to make them any money. I think when we did it at ours, I made $280 a week.
Oh my God.
Less than unemployment rate.
Yeah, I was so, just going to say.
I was brutal. So when I auditioned, I couldn't really sing either song. But then I got cast, which I was stoked about. My agents on a Friday night at like 5 p.m. were like, you got that job, by the way. That's all they said. And I was like, well, which fucking part did I get? And I couldn't take it. I lasted like a day. And then on Saturday, I texted Chuck and I was like, which part am I? Which part? She was like, Helene, sexy, sexy Helene. And I freaked out. I will say my career has been really beautiful in that I always like take on parts that I don't quite think I can do. You like level up a little bit. And at the time I was like, oh, I was so nervous to like play someone sexy on stage. I'm such a tomboy. Like the idea of like showing my breasts in any way, not that it has anything to do with being sexy. I find tomboy way more sexy for the official record, but you know what I'm saying? I was like,
yeah,
what? Totally. I didn't think I could do it. And I was very scared. But the truth is about that first run, I did not have all the notes in Charming. And I would warm up a ton. Some nights would hit those top notes. Most nights wouldn't, would screech my way through them, or I'd like opt for other notes, right? And then by the time it was a year later and we were doing it in a tent and we were having to do a morning show presentation at 6 in the morning, I could sing that song without warming up, right? It's like, that's how fast, yeah. If you're using your voice every day, it really is a muscle and it gets so freaking strong so fast. And I don't think people realize that. And that's one thing Deb Lappet has talked about a lot. She's like, some people can roll out of bed and sing the hardest thing ever. You got to know your body. Other people need to sing the song 100 times before they ever dare to do it in front of other people, because then nerves will set in and then your breathing's going to get funny. So if you know it 100 times, you know your muscles really well to know and to get your air quick.
Your performance, we got to sit on the stage when we saw Great Comet. Yes. It was like July of that during that summer, and on Broadway though. We didn't get to see it prior, and it was a tour de force. I mean, you
were sexy, sexy Helene.
Right? Oh yes, you were. That was amazing.
thank you, honey.
I loved that show.
Yeah, I mean, everyone talks about the tent, and it's sort of like if you caught it there, you know, or like, oh, I loved it at the tent, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
What was your experience of then bringing it to Broadway? I mean, it was your debut.
Oh my God, it was. I'll never forget the first show we did. I mean, I was so scared. It was actually everybody's debut except for Lucas Steele.
Wow. Oh, I loved him in that.
He's extraordinary. The other 9 principals debut. So we were all terrified. I can't remember the Imperial, I think it's like 1200, or they had ripped out a bunch of seats and there were 1200 left or something. I had done those Neil Young concerts before. So I've like been in front of crowds that big, but never like with a choir. You know what I mean? Like singing in a unit. Never, I had felt so exposed. I was so scared that first week of performing. And then it went away and became quite joyous. I was stoked to take it to Broadway. My only sort of disappointment about the journey from ours to the tent to Broadway is in needing to expand it as an immersive piece, which it was sort of revered for.
Right.
For my particular artistic taste, by the time it came to Broadway, there was so much sort of like razzle dazzle all around you. That I found what I call to be ADD theater. It was like a little ADD for me and could be difficult to follow the plot. Like you're not always like sure what you should be looking at. And that was a bummer to me because the like very quiet version at Ars Nova was, oh God, chef's kiss for my artistic money.
And it was the first. It was the first.
And it was the first. That's right. That's right. But I loved it. I mean, I loved all the iterations for sure. But my preference was the first. Absolutely.
Switching gears just quickly as I look at the clock, as we're running short on time here, I want to ask about Here We Are.
Oh, yeah.
Which we got the pleasure to see. I mean, Sondheim's last musical.
Yeah.
Very interesting piece. Mm-hmm. I'm still not totally sure I understood everything that I was watching. I wish I could have gone back again, and maybe another time to really digest all of it. But I need to tell you, you on stage in that, you resembled the Real Housewife of New York, Cy De Silva, who's from the new rendition of Real Housewives of New York. Did anybody tell you that at any
No,
point?
No, I'm writing it like down. Cy? No.
Oh my God. The haircut, so the wig they had her in, the costume, you were giving Cy. So anyway, I just need to get that out of the way there for a second.
I'm going to Google her later. I love it.
You must, Amber.
3 of my friends didn't know it was me. 3 humans. I mean, and by friends, I mean like loose colleagues in this community. Afterwards, we're like, I did not realize that was you, Amber. I can't believe it. I know. It's like, because I did look so different, you know, I find that. So that's like my favorite compliment.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You certainly really did.
became, is her name Claudia? Was that what it was?
Yes. Claudia. Yes. Claudia. Yeah. Yes. I like what love that. My coffin nails. What do they call it? Yeah. The like I had long nails and that hair. Oh, so good. So delicious. Yeah.
Oh my God. I loved it. What was your experience doing that show like?
Oh my God. I mean, it was a wild process. We rehearsed for a very long time because there was like an abnormally long time for most shows because there was so much to sort out. You know, David Ives was still working on the book. Of course, if Sondheim had been with us, like he is infamous for tweaking things through the final show before it's locked, you know, there would have been many changes there too, I'm sure. But Alex Gemignani was tasked with taking the material that did exist and finding ways to make like underscoring orchestration for the second act. Mm-hmm. And also like kind of figuring out where certain things should go. And there was just lots of tinkering and so many versions that we played with. It also took us a really long time to figure out the physical movement, like how are we going to do the driving scenes, which for my money was like so sensational what we ended up doing. I loved the choreography in that show, Sam Pinkleton. Oh God, it was so fun and weirdly stylized. I loved it.
As you went to brunch.
Yeah, as you went to brunch.
Didn't Sam direct Oh Mary?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Okay.
Yeah. Sam's been my choreographer for Great Comet, Scottish Play, and Here We Are. And when we were in Here We Are, there was a moment he's in the corner. He's like, Amber, if I'm ever in a room with you again, it will be as your director. And I was like, I'll hold you to it. So yes, he is mostly focusing on directing now. And then yeah, at the time he's like, yeah, I'm doing this play, Oh Mary. Like, I don't think anybody thought it was going to run for more than like a month. And here we are.
Amber Gray as Mary Todd Lincoln.
Oh my God. I'm excited to see Betty Gilpin do it. I'm like, oh, what will it be like with that? Yeah.
Very intrigued. Yeah, very intrigued.
Very intrigued. Mm-hmm. Very intrigued.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, everyone needs to see you in Eureka Day. It sounds like it is timely, even though I believe it was written pre-pandemic too, which is even more interesting.
Totally. Yeah. It has changed to accommodate this particular moment. Like the sort of one-liner jokes have been taken out because they came off as trite in this moment where we're unwilling to have cheap conversations around something that's so charged. And then there's a last line that is particularly genius that is clearly a new line. But for the most part, yeah, it hasn't been touched. It just like it holds up. Yeah.
And the cast is just phenomenal. We got a little cameo from Jessica Hedges, oh my God. But I mean, everybody in that show is someone, they have their own droves of fans. So I'm sure it's been a unique mix of audiences.
Too. Yeah. And we come from different worlds, which is really cool. I love, and that was true of Here We Are as well. It's like, we come from very different backgrounds of performing, which is just such a treat to be together. Yeah.
Oh, I love it. Amber, we could keep talking to you, but we have to say goodbye. Before we do, we always end on a dose of drama.
Ooh.
This is that thing that's on your mind. It could be that show you've been binge watching, that book you're reading.
Ooh.
You know, truly, drama could be anything. So this dose could capture anything from the world. Dylan, do you want to kick us off today?
Sure. My dose of drama is, and I'm saying this on the pod so I stay, you know, true to it. Mm. I am cooking one recipe a week this year. And now, Amber, this is big for me. I do not cook. Uh-huh. It is a Trader Joe's type situation.
Got it.
I am cooking one recipe a week and I'm putting it in a recipe book. And by the end of the year, I'm going to have 52 recipes. And this is my dose of drama. Y'all, it is so much easier to cook than you think. You just follow the recipe.
Just follow the recipe. That's brilliant.
Mm-hmm. Do you cook much?
The dynamic in our family has more become I'm the neurotic OCD cleaner and my partner is more the cook. My partner also, pretty much all the meat we eat in our household is game that he has caught. He's a rancher boy from Colorado. So we eat mutton, deer, squirrel, rabbit. We raise rabbits in our backyard that he like slaughters. And we have chickens in our backyard. We get the eggs. Like we are kind of homesteading in Brooklyn.
That's farm to table.
Farm to table, baby. But I highly recommend the New York Times turkey chili recipe, which we use ground deer in, but you don't have that. So try it out. Super easy.
I was going to ask. Super I was going to ask you any recipe suggestions. I'm gonna write it down.
Try
I love it.
Yeah. It's like 20,000 five-star reviews.
I can't believe it took us an hour into this conversation to hear about your fascinating home life and diet. Oh my gosh. Okay. My dose of drama is I am absolutely gagged that the original Broadway cast of Hadestown is gathering to go to London. And I need to ask you, Amber, when did this come about? And was it like a group text that lit up and everyone was like, we're doing this, right? Or I need to know, like, what's the tea?
I think I first heard a whisper about it Tony Sunday of 2024. I didn't actually get an offer about it until October of 2024. So a lot of time passed. So I am gagged as well, because I feel like it's a miracle that it's happening and we got it to work, and that anybody who was currently working was able to break their contract. Like, I'm over the moon about it, and I'm over the moon to have closure with those five humans who I do really feel like I made what the production became, who I made it with.
Mm.
I'm like so, so giddy about it. I'm so, so excited.
And to go to London.
Oh my God.
Will you binge AbFab again? Like, what is your binge show going to be?
Okay. I am a real binge TV person, but I'm also like, I never fully commit to things because I'm like cleaning or making the turkey chili. You know, I'm like always doing something else while I'm watching something. It's more like company while I'm doing these boring mundane tasks. You know what okay. I am in love with Squid Game. I also love Korean films. Like, they're just so good. I saw Old Boy and I was like, the original Old Boy, when I was like a child, like I should have never seen that film. I just love the aesthetic of them, and their culture in general is just so different than ours, and I'm into it. I'm like, if I ever go to Seoul, I don't think I'd come home. But I'm obsessed with Squid Game, and I was like so excited for the second season, which came out on December 26th, and Amber Gray was done watching it by like 8 a.m. on December
27th. Hell
yeah. Oh my gosh. And I have to wait 10 months for the third season, which I'm just like distraught about.
I didn't know we were going to.
So there's already a third?
They shot the second and the third together.
Okay.
But there's like a kind of a moment of breath that was a good place to pause and call it like the end of the season. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did it feel like its own season, or did it feel like it was really just ramping up towards season three?
Here's what I'm going to say. After watching season one, I was like, there's no way you can continue this story. Right. That is so cheap. It's like what will happen to us with Big Little Lies, which I also like loved back in the day.
Oh, we loved.
I'm like, yeah, you guys cannot go on. But like, sometimes we figure it out, right? Oh my God. It's extraordinary. The second season. I'm like, oh, I totally buy it. Like, yes, we should have this season. And then where it's at now, I can't wait for the third season. Yes, it is a ramp up, but it's also like, it's all so deserved in its own right as singular seasons.
Oh my God. I can't wait. God.
You've got me excited. I need to do it now. When I watched the first season, a whole 11 months after it aired.
Yeah.
I started like 8 a.m. on a Saturday and I was done by that night. It was just a full day. I could not stop.
Yeah, you can't stop.
It was great.
You can't stop. And that one, I will say, that one I don't do other things during, because I never listen to things in English dubbing. It makes me so angry.
Right.
And like, the way Koreans use their voices is like, it's so beautiful. You have to hear the original actors. So I'm like reading and listening. I'm really focused when I watch it. It costs me a lot.
I like that about foreign projects, because I can't be on my phone at the same time.
You really focus in. Yeah, you can't zone out and like do something else at the same time. Oh, I'm excited for you. Tell me what you think.
I know. Yes. Oh my goodness. Well, Amber, this has been such a treat for us. Thank you for being so, you know, just open and raw and just everything with us. Your performances always leave us just gagged. I mean, I don't really know if there's another word for it.
Thank you.
So incredible. And I can't wait to see you in Eureka Day and those lucky audiences.
Thank you,
in England. Oh my goodness.
Appreciate it.
Thank you again for doing this with us today.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Are you on any of the social media sites for anyone to follow you?
I mean, I'm on Instagram. It is my account. I have one strong post, which was to talk about Warriors. And that's I've been on it for like 8 years, and then I put one post because all the girls posted at the same moment for Warriors, whatever. Yeah. I mean, I'm there. Like, if people message me over it, I see it, you know, sometimes I respond. It's like my email, you know, I think of it as like email for people who don't have my real email.
Amazing. If everyone wants to follow you there, they're certainly welcome to. They should also follow us. We're at The Drama Podcast. Connor is at Connor McDowell. I'm at Dylan McDowell. And thank you again, Amber. This was such a treat for us.
Yeah, my pleasure. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Oh my gosh, pleasure was ours. And Connor, I will see you next time.
Oh,
Drama.